From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Bob Garfield is away this week. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
Don't shoot!
13 days after the shooting of an unarmed black teenager by a white police officer, the violence and unrest in the streets appear to have subsided. ABC.
Obviously, the killing of unarmed black people by mostly white police, or just trigger-happy white people, has gone on for a long, long time. Long before the death of Michael Brown in Missouri 2 weeks ago, or of Trayvon Martin in Florida 2 years ago. It's just that now, the media are paying more attention. As MSNBC's Tremaine Lee told us last week,
since the killing of Trayvon Martin, you've had the killing of Jordan Davis in Jacksonville, Florida, by someone who began an altercation with this young man over his loud music and fired into his car. The Radisha McBride case in Detroit, where a young woman showed up at someone's doorstep and they fired a shotgun through a screen door and tore off half of her face. Jonathan Ferrell in Charlotte, North Carolina, he gets in a car accident. He shows up at someone's door looking for help. She called the police. They end up gunning this young man down, again, unarmed. Eric Garner, more recently in New York City, selling loose cigarettes, died in a police chokehold. In each one of these cases, there was a mass of media around it.
He's right. The template for that coverage was set in March of 2012, some 10 days after 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was shot by a neighborhood watch captain. Ever since, the responses to these deaths by the public and the media has followed the same general trajectory, the same pattern. But Trayvon's story took the longest to take off in the mainstream. CBS was comparatively early, but look at the lag time.
Tracy Martin's teenage son was shot dead on this patch of grass 10 days ago, and the gunman belonged to a neighborhood watch group.
Then public protest mounted, though more contained than what would transpire later in Ferguson. After a couple of weeks, let's call it the context about Trayvon's character swept into the headlines, ranging from the chemical, Martin had traces of marijuana in his blood, to the sartorial.
I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Twitter played a big role, spawning communities with such hashtags as hoodies and Skittles and I am Trayvon Martin. And then the president weighed in.
I think all of us have to do some soul searching to figure out how does something like this happen.
It was an uncharacteristically personal call for introspection.
You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon.
And as the public waited for justice to be served, or not.
No justice for me.
The Reverend Al Sharpton showed up.
All over the world, they're calling for justice for Trayvon.
So, that's the pattern. You have the killing, the protest, mainstream media catching on, the hashtags, attempts to explain the killing of unarmed people with how they looked or what they smoked or drank or did or may not have done at some other time. Then Sharpton shows up, some high official speaks, and then someone invokes a national conversation.
There is much more to this issue than news headlines, so we invite you to take part in a national town hall about race relations in America. What are the challenges? What are the solutions to unity?
For Jordan Davis, like Trayvon, also 17, also killed in Florida the same year, in Jordan's case, by a man who said he felt threatened by the expletive-laced rap music blasting from the kid's car, and who also claimed to see a gun that was never found, the arc of the coverage was the same, but highly accelerated. Then, November 2, 2013, 19-year-old Renisha McBride crashes her car in a Detroit suburb and then loudly knocks on the window and door of a house, whereupon the owner fires a shotgun blast through the door into her face. Initially, the coverage is only local. Then the family speaks out, igniting protests and hashtags. And a few days after that, the networks jump in. Congressman John Conyers speaks. Al Sharpton speaks. The toxicology report says she was drunk. Her lifestyle, derived in part from her cell phone photos, is discussed. And finally, there's a call for a national conversation, in her case, about stand your ground laws, which Michigan, like Florida, also has. Last month in Staten Island, Eric Garner's horrifying death in a police chokehold is captured on video.
I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe.
The mainstream media arrives as swiftly as the protests and hashtags and Al Sharpton. We quickly learn Garner was selling loose cigarettes. Hey, that's not legal. And then, as the widely read website Vox notes, it sparks a national conversation about the use of force by police officers. Next up, the coverage of the death of Michael Brown. The story with the fastest trajectory and the widest coverage. The world is shocked. I mean, Egypt urges the U.S. to respect peaceful free expression. And Amnesty International sends a team of observers, researchers, and trainers for the first time to America, to Ferguson. When Michael Brown is shot by police in the middle of the street on Saturday, August 9th, protests and mainstream media coverage begin immediately. Twitter plays a big role, especially the hashtag, if they gunned me down, an instant rebuttal to the wide release of the teenager scowling and splaying his fingers in what some call a gang sign, others a peace sign. The demonstrations escalate. Sharpton arrives, calling for calm.
Some of us are making the story how mad we are, rather than how promising he was. Don't be a traitor to Michael Brown in the name of you, man.
And the pattern reasserts itself. See if you can spot it.
New information this morning out of Ferguson, Missouri. Police there connecting Michael Brown to what's called a strong armed robbery.
He might have been affected by the marijuana, so that he may have been acting in a crazy way.
I just cannot believe that this is the tactic that this police chief and his administration are using to try to make this young man be deserving to be gunned down in the street like a dog.
President Obama released a statement on this case just about 90 minutes ago. He says the death of Michael Brown is heartbreaking, and Michelle and I send our deepest condolences to his family and his community at this very difficult time.
We have to have a national conversation about how police forces should interact with the African-American community who happens to be paying their salary, who want to be served and protected.
Let's observe that the way these stories unspool in real time and on social media and soon everywhere else mostly works to the benefit of all concerned. First, to those long-ignored communities that suddenly have a global opportunity to be heard, and to those outside concerned with social justice, and to those news outlets that see ratings spike and, less cynically, a chance for relevant, important coverage. But when we heard Tremaine's list of the dead at the top of the show, he included one man who, you should pardon the expression, didn't fit the profile. Jonathan Ferrell, who knocked on a woman's door in Charlotte, North Carolina last September seeking help after a car accident, prompting a panicked 911 call and ultimately his own death from a policeman's gun. That story didn't go massively viral, because here's what happened the very next day.
Tonight, Chief Rodney Monroe solemnly answered the questions neighbors, friends of the victim, and Channel 9 had about the shooting.
Homicide investigators signed warrants for Officer Carrick for the charge of voluntary manslaughter.
The chief made no attempt to justify what happened, and he gave the public a name, Officer Randall Carrick. 2 days later, the PD released audio tapes of Carrick speaking to the dispatcher. And now, after the state's initial failure to indict Carrick, he's awaiting trial. To be sure, there's no happy ending, but it was a reasonable start. Whether the shooter is an officer or a civilian, it's police departments that ultimately determine how the story is told. This power to attract or deflect the press is probably the most powerful weapon in their highly militarized arsenals. But they haven't used it. Maybe it seems hard. Maybe they haven't seen the value. Maybe they will now.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, are politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.